just pivot. You know, that was, 2 years ago. The business was, right there where you turned. We say if you could fog a mirror, you're buying a house, like that's what was happening. It's not happening now, but how are you going to make it happen? If you didn't make the shot from one angle, find a different angle.
Welcome to the Real Freedom Show, where we inspire you to pursue your passion to gain time and financial freedom through opportunities in real estate. I'm your host, Mike Swenson. Let's get some real freedom together. Welcome to another episode of Real Freedom, Real Estate Leveraged Freedom, where we talk about different ways that you can build time and financial freedom through different opportunities in real estate. I'm your host, Mike Swenson. If you want to get started in your journey in real estate, check out our website, freedomthroughrealestate.com. We have our episodes, blogs, you name it, different resources on there, really with the goal to help inspire you, help you find a path in real estate that's going to be a great fit for you, maybe bring up a different idea, something that's going to spur you to take action, because we know that we can't get where we want to go without taking action. And so underlying all the education is the action taking. And I know a lot of our guests speak to that as well. And so with that being said, excited about a super great episode for today. We have Cherie Walters and Nicole Juarez on the episode. They are identical twins from Twins Realty Team, two faith-driven moms who turn their passions into thriving businesses and real estate. Cherie is on the lending side. Nicole is on the agent side, and excited to hear kind of your journey of entrepreneurship and growth as you guys continue to carve out your career in real estate. So welcome to the show. We're so excited to have you.
Thank you for having us. We're going to be here.
Yep. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Well, yeah. Why don't you just start, just talk about, one of you goes share, and then we can pop into the other one, whatever you guys want to do. But yeah, just kind of your background a little bit, getting into real estate, why real estate for you, and we'll just take the conversations from there.
Okay, well, it's typical that I go first in everything because I was the first twin born. And so I usually start most conversations and most everything, pretty even much. This profession she started. So. Because I do mortgages, like Mike said. And so I kind of started that career because I had gotten my business degree, and funny enough, the business degree really didn't get me to where I wanted to go. I didn't really feel like I was serving people that I wanted to serve, and definitely wasn't going to make the money that I had the opportunity to make in real estate. But I didn't know that at first. I just knew that being in a management position and managing people kind of it just didn't really seem the route that I wanted to go, even though I got a business degree. Odd, but I loved money. And I always enjoyed money. Even as a kid, I thought, I want to save every penny I get. I got to save. And I always had a goal. And I always thought I'm going to help somebody with money. In fact, I started working with money as a teller. I worked at a CVS store as a teller, and I loved doing that. And I always thought about the money behind it. Then I went into ticketing and managed a cash drawer and things like that. So it was in me. I always thought about money. So anyways, my husband is a broker, and he said, you don't want to do managing people. So what can we do? We can put you with a mortgage lender and you can be his assistant. And I thought, well, okay, I'll do anything. Just get me out of the industry that I'm in. So went into being an assistant for someone and a broker, I'm sorry, mortgage lender, branch manager. So was his assistant for 2 years, decided, hey, I can do this by myself. I can go out and sell to real estate agents and tell them to use me as a lender. And so that's kind of how I got started. 13 years later, here I am. I'm now a branch manager at CMG Mortgages. And so love it, have built a great career in real estate, and love the behind it is just serving people and doing what I like to do, the money part of the transaction. I started in real estate. I've been a real estate agent for 12 years. So she started doing lending, and we were working at a call center prior to. And, those hours are 7 to 3, or if you got a good shift, it's 7 to 3 or something like that. Or at one point I was working 1 to 10. And I had a child, and so anyways, that the hours were not optimal, not something that I really enjoyed doing. The money was okay, but not great. Either way, she got into mortgages, and we've always worked together, and we're better together. And so I saw what she was doing, and I thought, how can we work together again? Because she was now in a profession where we left each other and we weren't working together anymore. So I thought, how could we work together again? I did not want to be her competition. So no one really wants to be her competition. She's 4 a.m. getting up in the morning and going to the gym, and she's just a beast. So I did not want to be her competition there, but I did want to work with her. So I said, okay, well, I will be a real estate agent. So I went and got my real estate license, and the rest is kind of history. But I worked really hard. We worked together. She helped me do the test, and not do the test, but study. We studied together, and it was something that was important to me to do. And so we've just been working together since doing real estate, and it's been fun. It's been fun.
Now, talk a little bit about, as we know, the business is hard. It's challenging, especially building up client bases, earning trust, earning respect as you guys get started. What would be some of your thoughts, maybe as tips or advice for people looking to get into the industry, just in terms of kind of your success or, just talking about kind of your ways to, as you guys started to build your business to gain some traction as you were trying to earn, market share and mind share from all your friends, family, and others?
I would say that we have different lives. I have a 6-year-old and a 12-year-old, so her life looks a little different than mine. But we're both very successful in what we do. Being a mom with younger kids, you definitely have to have a schedule. It's important to have one. The office in the morning, making phone calls, and making sure that you are available. And it's tough when you're a mom with younger kids. 4 o'clock is pickup time for the kids, so you have to make time, but you have to be at the office. And really, money should not be the motivating factor. It should be serving others, because that's something that comes later. Money is just, you work, you get paid in any profession. So, but if your goal is serving others and how can I make someone else's life better, you'll make money at anything. You just have to find that. You have to find that. You have to find the service, how you're going to service them. And I think, as far as my part of that, I've always thought outwork them. I might not be the smartest person in the group, but I'm going to outwork you. So I'm going to show up when they're not there. I'm going to find a time when you're sleeping, I'm up, and when you're not working, I'm working. And you'll find that there's a lot of people that can't compete in just that aspect because they're too busy going shopping, watching the grass grow. I don't know. They're not putting the effort behind it. So if you can just have that mindset of I'm gonna work when they're not working, and that is for me as a mortgage lender, that just means making the phone calls to my real estate agent and saying, hey, I'm here. Do you need anything? Let me tell you what's going on in the market, providing updates, providing value. Why would they be calling? Why should they be calling you? And if you can provide the value, they'll call you, but they got to know you're out there. They got to know that you're going to answer the phone when they call. They got to know that you're going to have the resources available. You don't have to have all the answers. So for those new people, it doesn't mean that you have to have the answer. And sometimes the most trusted thing for people is to say, I don't know, but I'll get you the answer. Just get the answer. You don't have to know everything. You just got to be willing to put the work in to get the answer. If you say you're going to do something, do it. If you're going to say, I don't know the answer, call them back fairly quickly. You can't, call them 3 or 4 days later. You can't go play a round of golf and then say, hey, I'll call you back after my golf tournament. Nobody cares, about your golf tournament. They need the answer to make their real estate transaction work. And as far as the money, I'm the most pretty important part of that piece of the puzzle is the money. So if they're calling me, they need answers, and they can rely on me for that. So getting answers, outworking your competition is a big part for success on my part.
Now, talk a little bit about you guys working together. For some people, it might work together. For some people, it might not work together. Would love to hear kind of your guys' story. Obviously, you were together, then not working together, now back together. Just being able to balance, because I know sometimes, you know, maybe it's not twins, maybe it's a spouse, a different sibling, very close friends trying to find ways to do life together and be in business together. And sometimes that can be a challenge. So would love to just kind of hear your guys' thoughts on that, working together as sisters and as twins.
We're pastor's kids. And so we've grown up kind of being taught two is better than one. And so we really grabbed onto that early on, especially as being twins, you know, so we knew the mindset of if somebody falls, there's someone there to pick the other person up. But as we, you know, came into our careers, we really found that it's a big deal, especially in real estate. There's so many moving parts. If you don't have a team, there's strength in the numbers. So I can only get so many transactions done with myself. But if I tag Nicole in, if she tags in her other team member and my team, it's a unstoppable force. But so really leaning into strength in numbers and knowing that you can't get everything done by yourself and relying on that, I feel like that just catapulted us to the next step. It's just really, how can I get more people to buy in and help me get more things done?
And you don't really realize the resources that you have. Use the resources that you have. Your strength may not be talking. Your strength may not be paperwork, but you have other people just look in your circle or get around people that are in that profession and lean into them. There's so many people there's lots of real estate agents, there's lots of mortgage lenders, but find a good team, talk to them. And the ones that are willing to help you, use them. Not use them in a bad way, but let them help you. That's the one thing that I don't think that people really take in consideration. You have resources at your fingertips, and if you just use those, it can get you to where you're trying to go a lot quicker. So we have my niece and her daughter. We tell her all the time, use your resources. You have us. It took us, you know, maybe so many years to get where you learn from our mistakes, and we're teaching those mistakes to her so she doesn't have to learn them the hard way. So use your resources. I think that's important. It saves you time, saves you so much time. Yeah, countless hours of time. I think if you just use the people that are around you and don't be afraid to ask the question, don't be afraid. It's funny that people get very intimidated by successful people, but a lot of times those successful people just want to be asked the question, just want to know. I feel like they want to pour into somebody else. They spend so many hours into learning and crafting their skill. And so they're just waiting for somebody to say, well, how did you do it? What do you do? Or what is it? You know, just one piece of nugget of knowledge, you know, it could take you to the next step. I mean, usually it's just changing one thing. And if you keep changing, making those changes, just 1% better, try to be 1% better. And it's a game changer. Just having that, you know, in your head of I'm going to get better and I'm going to do it and I'm going to ask and I'm not going to be afraid. It's hard sometimes, but you can do it.
How do you guys balance wearing the sister hat, the friends hat, and the kind of business partner hat together when you guys are working? Because I worked for parents and their son on a real estate team together. And so you would see different dynamics of, like, you know, kind of the conflict in the workplace, or the, you know, navigating relationships in the workplace, navigating relationships outside of the workplace. I don't need to hear all the dirty laundry. I'm just curious, like, in terms of working together, kind of balancing, because you are business partners, you're sisters, and then friends on top of being sisters. So just kind of curious to hear how that works on a day-to-day or week-by-week basis.
I have the best. Now, I don't know about her, but I have the best time. I enjoy working with her. When we're traveling, we're working. When we're working, I mean, it's just everything's incorporated together. So there's not a dull moment, but we don't really... I think the one thing that she probably gets upset with me is time management. Being on time. I am notorious that she likes to rush. I'm not rushed. You don't rush if you plan. And so there's not really that. That's not the problem. Really, I think forgiveness is the thing. When you're working with any team.
Grace. You have to give people
yeah. Grace. That's the thing. Go ahead. That's really what it boils down to, is because you understand, even though I don't like it, I understand Nicole doesn't time is a thing for her. You know, like if you tell her to be here at 9 o'clock, I mean, she's gonna be here at 8:59, you know. And me, I'm like, I gotta be here 20 minutes early. I mean, really an hour early, I feel most comfortable if I'm hour early just in case something happens, but that's not her. So I have to understand that, knowing your team member and knowing, hey, that's not her area of expertise. You know, that's not where she's at. And if you just know that, then you accept it and then you move on. Now I know that she's not going to be here at 8, you know, at 9 or 8 o'clock if the meeting's at 9. I know that she's not going to be an hour early, but what can I do to prepare her for the meeting that's going to happen at 9 o'clock so that when she gets here, we're not upset, we're not arguing, and I don't, you know, ruin the whole at the whole energy, because it matters, you know, like how you talk to your team, how you communicate with them. And so even though, because there's things that I'm not good at that she's good at. And so she has to, you know, have grace on me in certain areas where I'm not very fun. Flexible. Oh yeah, I call her the fun twin, and I'm the black and white twin, obviously, because I do money. And it's very black and white. The math maths or it don't, you know. So I feel like I'm just she has to have grace in other areas for me. So, and I have to be flexible. I have to be flexible with a 6-year-old. I'm a single mom, and with a 6-year-old and a 12-year-old. So I have to be flexible. There's so many different schedules that I'm managing, schedules for my clients, managing schedules for my children, my schedule. I was just thinking about that earlier today. You know, I try to get getting done by 4 o'clock. You know, that's exercising, talking to clients, managing the files that I'm working on. There's so many things. It's all do. But you have to have a goal and a mindset of I can do it versus this is hard and it sucks. You'll have a moment, but you have to work through that moment and know that there's so much better, so much there's so many
The good outweighs
opportunities.
the
Yeah,
bad.
the good outweighs the bad. So latch on to the good and not the bad, and just overcome those obstacles. You just have to find a way to overcome the obstacles, because there's tons of obstacles in your way. About them, just get through them. The drama happens. There is no family drama, the business drama. It doesn't really matter if it's family or not. There will be drama in the workplace, but to manage it to where it's controllable, you know, it's your teammate, you know, whether you've been there 10 years or 2 months, your teammate. So if you're working in an office together, if you're even on real estate transaction, for me, I don't win unless we all. As whether I'm representing a seller or a buyer, I'm not winning unless we all win. So we can all win or we can all lose. And my objective is for my client to get the house sold or to buy the house, whichever the case is. That's my goal. So if I'm working with on the other side of the transaction, if I'm working with a difficult agent, oh well, I gotta work with them. So I do my best to not let that energy, not be upset, and just keep the end goal in mind. How can I get through this? How can I make this transaction enjoyable for my client and myself? What can I do? So don't think about it's her job. Oh, it's this person's job. It's our job. And just get it done.
If you're like at a non-work thing, do you find that the two of you still keep talking about work, or are you able to turn it off when you need to?
Sadly, no. I
No.
say sadly, no, because we're pretty much all income, like, yeah, all the time. It's work or church. Yeah, work or church, I guess. Because I said our dad's a pastor, and so very involved with that. She does a lot of the events. She does a lot of events, and we have, you know, Father's Day and Mother's Day and all the holidays. And so when she signs up to do something, that also includes myself. So I tag her in, of
Of
course, all the
course.
time. But no, we don't have a off button with work, but we enjoy it. So it's not really like, oh, we have to talk about work, or oh, we have to talk about, enjoy these things. So when you enjoy what you do, it's not a problem. You know, we enjoy it. So it's fun.
Are you looking to get started or scale in real estate investing but don't know your next step? Are you overwhelmed thinking about finding deals, analyzing deals, doing due diligence, and managing properties on top of it? Go ahead and push the easy button and invest with us. Real estate investing is what we do full time. We've done dozens of deals with hundreds of doors. We have the knowledge and experience to handpick the best deals that most investors can't find. We vet large off-market deals all the time where you can hopefully find returns and economies of scale that you just can't find on your own. The best thing is it's 100% passive to you for less capital than you put down trying to acquire a property on your own. Don't let this year go by where you don't make the leap, add to your portfolio, or you just sit in analysis by paralysis. To find out more, visit freedomthroughrealestate.com and click on invest. You can book a call and learn more there. So get to scaling your portfolio now with us by your side. Now, you know, the last couple of years of real estate have been a challenge in terms of kind of, you know, different factors. You've got interest rates, you've got different lawsuits changing how agents act, and then business has just been a challenge. And so curious to hear from each of you, you know, in the mortgage space and in the agent space, how you guys have been able to kind of keep afloat and keep moving forward here in the midst of the headwinds. You know, there's times I feel like where you're in the headwinds and there's sometimes you're in the tailwinds, and we've been in headwinds for a little while. So curious to hear for your guys' perspective about overcoming a challenging market.
It has been challenging. I would definitely say you have to find a way, and finding the way is, you know, we started doing podcasts. We just talking, getting out there more, talking to other agents, making ourselves available to being open-minded. I think that's really been helpful, is being open-minded and understanding. You have to pivot. Basically, that's what I get. What you're saying is just pivot. You know, that was, you know, 2 years ago, the business was, you know, right there where you turned. We say if you could fog a mirror, you're buying a house, you know, like that's what was happening. It's not happening now, but how are you going to make it happen? If you didn't make the shot from one angle, find a different angle. And that's the angles that we're, you know, trying to find. Like Nicole mentioned, podcasts, you know, that's just something, a different outlet, you know, finding a way to make something happen. And you can't just say, well, you know, man, it's real hard. Yeah, okay. But, and it's hard, and we pick ourselves up and we find a way to get the deal done. You get a deal done, find a different way. So I think that because you about 90% of your competition is saying it's hard. So while they're saying it's hard, you work and you'll close the deal and you'll make the money and you'll continue in the business, and the other ones will still be talking about it's hard finding another job. And I think the statistics show that 90% of agents quit, real estate agents quit within their first year. And you don't really, maybe, who was it that we talked to, a builder the other day, that said they sold the agent two houses in a year. If you're selling two houses a year, you really shouldn't be in business, right?
How could you be in business?
I mean, and another thing to consider is a real estate agent gets paid the same amount no matter if you've been in the business 2 months or, as myself, 12 years. So that's really crazy to think that there's no, the pay scale's the same. So I think, again, leaning into people that know the business and you're willing to listen and have an open mind about learning. I think learning from others is a big part of it. You see somebody that's successful in real estate, career that you're wanting to be in, you know, you need to use them again as a resource and talking to them. So people look at them as a competition, but I look at it as an opportunity, you know. So learn from those people that are still making it in the business. If they withstand the test of time, a decade in the business, I mean, they're doing something. Like if they're still in business after a decade of,
it's their full-time career, not the part-time.
I work at 8 to 5, and then after I get done with my 8 to 5, then I decide I'm going to be a real estate agent or a mortgage lender or a blah, blah, blah.
How can you be a profession at that?
How can that be your profession, and how can you guide people through the most important part of their life? Maybe five homes has purchased within their lifetime, you know, a forever home or whatever the case may be. But how can you really guide them through that transaction if that's not your full-time career?
Interesting when you mentioned pivot, Sheree, because for me, that's kind of what got me into investing myself in real estate more, because I remember I was working with investor clients, helping them buy small multifamily properties. And as the market started to change and the rates went up, a lot of my clients are like, yeah, these rates are too high, I'm just going to wait. And I remember thinking like, Okay, so if my clients are all waiting and this is how I make my money, I need to pivot myself, right? And so then I was like, how do I find properties that I can say yes to? And that was kind of the seed of pivot. And yeah, for people that have been in the business for 20, 30, 40 years, and you've gone through multiple market cycles, you're right. You have to find ways to pivot. What worked 2 years ago or 3 years ago might not work today. And so intriguing that you guys are, you know, open up to, you know, new challenges, new ways of marketing yourselves and finding yourselves to be able to keep afloat and keep things moving forward in the headwinds. So as you guys think about the future here, what do you guys think about your future in real estate? Is it, you know, I'm going to continue to do what I love? Is it, if you love what you do, you never work a day in your life and we'll keep doing that? Or kind of curious to hear, what are you guys thinking about as you think about the future for you guys over the next 10, 20 years?
Oh, we're going to keep doing it. And we're gonna do it well. I feel like we've found our area of expertise. We've now have the experience to back up the license that we have now. So we have the experience of helping those customers get to through the, you know, challenges and getting to their dream home. And so now we can really use that as a testimony to other people and get those people to buy homes. And so I'm just so excited about it because I feel like now we can use that information. We have the customers and we have the
credibility.
The credibility there. So I'm excited about it. And I think it's just going to be, we're at the start of the biggest part of the next few years. That's what I think.
I agree.
I think I'm excited about it too, but I also see us doing a little bit more of education for newer agents and people that have not been in the industry, and educating them and letting them know it's possible. You can work at Walmart and decide to change your mind and start a new career, and you can do it. And here are the ways to do it. And here's how we did it, because we did it. You know, we went from an 8 to 5, work for somebody, and I'll never work for anybody again a day in my life. You know, I will not do it. But I would love to empower other people to be able to say they did that. And to say that just because you know, I have an associate's degree in business, and that's it, really. But you don't need a degree to be a mortgage lender. And so even
a real estate agent,
right? I don't have a degree at all. So, and a single mom, I'm excited about letting people know that you can do it. You can absolutely can do it. It doesn't matter what's in your way. Single mom, no degree. Who cares? If you want to do it, you can do it. Just get out there and do it. Make it happen. So I'm excited about educating people and letting them know that is possible.
I know for me, talking to our kids about education and stuff like that, my wife has 2 master's degrees, and being able to say, hey, she's got a degree in what she's doing, and if you want to do what dad does, you don't have to have a degree. That doesn't mean you are instantly successful. You still got to learn a lot of things. And I know people can get degrees in different things. And my degree was in entrepreneurship. And so I look at that as that's kind of a multi-purpose tool that is helpful in real estate, even though it's not real estate. And I had considered minoring in real estate in college and decided not to. And then 10 years later, got back into real estate. So there's lots of different things you can do. So thank you guys so much for coming on, sharing your story. Love to see both of your unique perspectives on the business and your unique niches also being in the business and lending on the real estate side. For people that want to reach out to you, learn more about what you guys are doing or connect with you, how can they do so?
You can go on to our Facebook page at Twins Realty Team. We also have a YouTube channel, Twins Realty Team, so you can catch us there. We're on Instagram, same Twins Realty Team, so that's where you can find us.
You've got the market covered, Twins Realty Team. Awesome.
Yep.
I love it. Well, thank you so much, and best of luck to you guys as you continue in the future.
One of the best deals I ever bought, I was driving down the street and I was driving past a fourplex, and I saw this older guy literally like throwing garbage in a dumpster out of a unit. And I stopped and I went to talk to him. It turns out he's the owner. You know, he's later in his investing career. He's already, you know, kind of toying with the idea of like liquidating some of his stuff. And he's just upset because this unit got abandoned. It was full of garbage. And we started talking. And right then and there, because I mean, this is one of the cities I operated in, I threw him an offer that was about 50 grand below what the market rate should have been. And I was like, hey, you can wash your hands of it. I was like, you don't have to haul any more garbage out. I was like, I will take care of everything. And like, we shook hands and we ended up signing the paperwork.
Welcome to the Real Freedom Show, where we inspire you to pursue your passion to gain time and financial freedom through opportunities in real estate. I'm your host, Mike Swenson. Let's get some real freedom together. Welcome to another episode of Real Freedom, Real Estate Leverage Freedom, where we talk about different ways that people build time and financial freedom in real estate. I'm your host, Mike Swenson. And if you want to get started on your real estate investing journey, check out our website, freedomthroughrealestate.com. That's freedomthroughrealestate.com. That's where we put all of our great content. If you're trying to find a path of somebody who's been there, done that, and you resonate with their story, awesome. That's why we do these episodes, to be able to share great stories. And today is no different. We've got Cody Stegman here. Cody has gotten 50 units in the last 5 years, contractor background, working in the Midwest, Southern Minnesota, which I can resonate with being a Southern Minnesota guy myself. So we're here to hear Cody share his story of kind of how he got into real estate and what he's building. So Cody, we're so excited to have you on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Why real estate for you? Kind of how did you get started down that path? And we'll just take it from there.
Yeah, for sure. So I have a construction background, like you said, and I found myself in a position where I realized I was going to have a broken body and no money and be old very quickly if I didn't do something different instead of just, you know, toiling away and not investing in myself in some capacity. And I kind of had some adjacent interactions with people that were in the real estate space. And I kind of put that spark in my mind, seeing, hey, they seem successful. It seems like they have, you know, money, have things figured out. So I just started doing some heavy digging in terms of reading books, podcasts, YouTube videos. I remember I read Rich Dad Poor Dad. I think it was one of the first books I read, which I think everybody reads in their journey. But after kind of diving into all that information, I realized that real estate could be a pathway where I could have actual time and financial freedom, where I could have a life where I wasn't going to be stuck working forever, essentially. And you know, that was really appealing to me. I didn't come from a strong financial literacy background. I didn't really think it was possible, I guess, until I had that kind of exposure interacting with those people and educating myself. And then after that, I just kept educating myself. I found a deal, and then I actually found someone in my network that was willing to partner with me on the financial side, and we were off to the races.
You know, I think about it as real estate is, as you continue to grow, you're going to get smarter, sharper with your deals, and you're really building momentum. You know, we used to talk a lot when I was on the residential real estate side as an agent, like having the wind at your back versus running into the wind. And that's really the beauty of real estate, is you're getting more assets. And if not, you know, even if you don't make money on a deal, you learned a lesson, right? And so 100%. That's a lesson you can apply for the next deal. So the goal is you're getting that momentum behind you, pushing you forward, versus feeling like you're always running into the wind, or at a job, right? A job can be taken away from you. And so, yeah, Rich Dad Poor Dad is definitely a key momentum changer for a lot of people.
100%.
All right. So then in terms of, you know, you mentioned your first deal, looking for deals. What did that process look for you? And then ultimately, you know, there's a lot of people that love to listen to podcasts and watch videos, but don't take action. So you mentioned about, you know, finding somebody to help you with that first deal. So just kind of talk through that process of going and kind of getting started and finding that first opportunity.
For sure. So, you know, this was a little over 10 years ago that I bought my first deal. So, you know, at that point there were opportunities on the MLS. You still had to kind of sift through places. But I was able to find one on a listing service. I just started underwriting properties that I was seeing that kind of fit, you know, my buy box. And then when I found one, I connected with an agent, and I also started presenting this deal to these people. You know, and I think if you can operate from a place of obviously having educated yourself, and you can have a deal and you have a plan, it's a lot easier to present that to people if you're looking for some sort of like financial facet to the deal. And yeah, and this is kind of how it shook out. We were able to do that first deal. And then obviously, you know, with each deal, that process did kind of evolve. And like you said, we got a lot better and kind of changed our strategies as time went on. But that's kind of how that first one really worked out. It was educating myself thoroughly, finding a deal, and then being able to present that to people to find someone that was willing to take the chance on investing investing in the deal.
Was that single family or multifamily?
It was a single family flip, actually. It was the first deal.
You know, I talk about, and obviously I'm not the one that came up with this, but, you know, kind of the triangle. So for people listening, thinking about it, you know, the way we explained it is, you know, there's three things: time, money, and expertise, right? And so, you know, you're looking at like, what value can I bring to the table? And then what am I looking for? And so in your case, right, you know, looking for somebody with money so you can add hopefully time and, you know, may or may not have had expertise. And that's not the end of the day if you've got the time, right? And so you're looking at how do you add value to somebody else who's going to add the value of the check for you to be able to get started and to be able to gain that expertise. So then you get more and more in the future, right?
100%. And it is really great because, I mean, the reality is kind of no matter where you're at, if you lack expertise or knowledge, or you lack time, or you lack money, as long as you have one of those, the reality is you could probably find somebody that has one of those other factors and you could do a deal together. So, you know, if you're missing one of those pieces, don't let that be the thing that stops you from trying to do a deal.
And out of curiosity, like, how did you present that to that person? Was it a, here's kind of what the money's going to look like and we'll have something formal in place, or if we make any money, we split it? Or kind of like, I'm curious, like your first deal, you know, you're not going to have, maybe not be as sophisticated in that offering, but kind of just for folks listening that haven't done that before, what advice can you give them, or how can you kind of walk through that process of finding an investor partner right out of the gate?
For sure. So, you know, when we did it, we actually set up an LLC, drew up an operating agreement and everything. So he actually had ownership in the deal as well. And then, you know, me coming from the place of not inputting any money, I was very transparent that, hey, the bank gets paid first, you get paid second, and then anything that's left will split on top of that to make them feel as comfortable as possible. And this is where kind of doing my homework too, just in terms of presenting it. I pulled a ton of comps. I was like, hey, these are the materials that we're going to use. This is the square footage. This is the number of the bedrooms. I made the like reason I was doing it as clear as possible to him. So it was really easy to digest and understand. And I think that was the biggest thing that helped. And I've done that a lot over the years. I used hard money a ton, especially when I was earlier on in my career. And repeating that model has been invaluable where, hey, if I can, you know, send someone an email and be like, hey, here's 10 comps. You know, this is the property, this is what I want to do, blah, 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 pro forma rents, like laying out everything I can as clear as possible. Obviously, that's going to make someone feel a lot more comfortable to be willing to invest in the deal with you.
Now, during that time, were you still working another job? And this was kind of something that you did on the side? Or did you see this as an opportunity to be able to make some money when we sell the house and get the profits? Or kind of what did that look like at that point?
Yeah. So basically I was working on the flips full time. And then I was doing full time construction. Like I have my own construction business at that point. I had started one. So I was doing both of those full time. Mm-hmm. So it was a lot of hours.
I was going to say, to your point, I mean, I worked construction for 3 summers in college. And my only thought was, you know, I worked alongside a lot of guys that were, you know, in their 40s and 50s. And I was like, I do not know how their body holds up, because as a college kid, like my knees are hurting, my back's hurting doing this for 3 summers. Are you looking to get started or scale in real estate investing, but don't know your next step? Are you overwhelmed thinking about finding deals, analyzing deals, doing due diligence, and managing properties on top of it? Go ahead and push the easy button and invest with us. Real estate investing is what we do full time. We've done dozens of deals with hundreds of doors. We have the knowledge and experience to handpick the best deals that most investors can't find. We've got large off-market deals all the time where you can hopefully find returns and economies of scale that you just can't find on your own. The best thing is it's 100% passive to you for less capital than you put down trying to acquire a property on your own. Don't let this year go by where you don't make the leap, add to your portfolio, or you just sit in analysis by paralysis. To find out more, visit freedomthroughrealestate.com and click on invest. You can book a call and learn more there. So get to scaling your portfolio now with us by your side. So, okay, you get your first one, and then how does that momentum build into the future deals for you?
Yeah, most definitely. So, I mean, the first one is obviously the scariest one by far. I mean, I remember sweating bullets even going to that initial closing table, like, man, once we sign, this is real. Like, you know, the deal has to get done. Like, the onus is on us for things to get completed. Like, no one's coming to save us. But, you know, kind of once you get the first deal done, you realize, okay, like this is a repeatable process and we can do this. And that just kind of, I guess, leaned into us kind of repeating the process on the flipping side moving forward. And we flipped almost exclusively. When I say we, like, so me and different people that I had worked with when I had started, I pretty much was doing exclusively rehabs. And then after we kind of got established and went through those processes, eventually I kind of had the chops under it. We had saved some money and was like, okay, I want to transition into actually buying rentals because I want to have something that is, you know, an actual like cash producing asset that I can own long-term that'll go up in value.
Yeah, I know that's a natural transition for people because flips is just in some ways a job because it's like you make money off of it, right? And then you don't necessarily have anything to show for it. And so that natural evolution, short of the profits, which is good for a lot of people, but in terms of kind of that wind at your back type of mentality, right? And so then that's kind of where the holding comes in. I'm curious, location-wise, what areas were you looking at? Was it one particular city, one particular area? Was it kind of like, hey, anything in this general area that works, you know, for people that are maybe listening, like how in the heck do I get started and what am I looking at? Kind of how wide of an area were you looking at for your first couple of deals?
Yeah. So I was staying pretty much exclusively where I lived for the first couple of deals. And I actually moved partway through this process. So the market I was operating in changed as well. And I kept operating in that market. We did toy around a little bit with trying to own some stuff remote. And we kind of realized that we wanted to develop an infrastructure of, you know, subcontractors and eventually like in-house people. And to facilitate that, we thought it was going to be easier to kind of lean into where we were at in our local market. Just because, you know, we were looking to kind of build a hands-on, boots on the ground style business, just because they kind of worked well with what we wanted and what we enjoy doing. So we ended up settling on the Mankato, Minnesota market where I'm at. And then I operate within about a 30 mile radius around that.
Do you self-manage the properties yourself now, or do you have somebody that's helping you with that, or kind of what's that look like today?
Yeah. So initially I had self-managed everything. And then now we've kind of set up an infrastructure where I will jump in on like the more complex stuff or kind of like brainstorm when we have specific issues, but we do have someone else taking care of that.
Yeah. And I think too, obviously logistically it makes sense, you know, to keep that proximity close because you don't want to be driving all over the place, especially as you get into kind of rural areas. Like there's a long way to go. And then even understanding the other markets, there's a lot to take on. And so, you know, I think for people listening, just understanding like it's great at the end to kind of vertically own everything in its path. But logistically, you might need to get some help early on so that you don't have to learn how to do everything yourself. So then in terms of kind of as you started to grow, were you still focusing more on the single family or did you go to multifamily or kind of whichever deal made the most sense?
Yeah, so we were kind of operating in the single family, small multifamily space for the most part, just because it felt really digestible and approachable for A, our cash position, but then B, we kind of had figured out the market at that point. Like we knew really clearly like, what can I get for rents in this type of property with this type of layout, these type of finishings? So we were kind of able to really, really dial into that. And we've actually continued to kind of stay into that. Like our buy box is either single family or small multifamily, just because we've been able to get very good at like the evaluation and rehabbing process where you can be really cost effective doing it. And obviously, you know, it's enticing the idea to go bigger and we have toyed with it, but it's hard if you have a process that is like working and you understand really well, it is kind of hard to step away from that.
So the type of work on the properties that you're doing, I mean, obviously you've got your construction background, you've probably got a lot of great connections in that field. So is that what you were really looking at? Was it properties that were vacant at the time, needed a good chunk of work, and then you're updating and then placing tenants at market rent, or kind of what did that look like in terms of finishing work that need to happen before you're done and the properties filled with tenants?
For sure. So, I mean, for the most part, we try to avoid really big problems. Now, if the property is great and the price makes sense, and there's a singular big issue, we will take those deals on, but we're not looking for large scale gut deals most of the time. What we're primarily looking for is landlords that are, you know, tired, overwhelmed, properties are heavily mismanaged, under rented. And a lot of times the building itself is in good shape, but it's just very ugly. Just because we've found that like, if you understand the market really clearly, you can get these properties discounted and you can be really cost effective with these like renovations. And, I think that's one of those pitfalls or places a lot of people fail, unfortunately, where they do tend to over rehab units and not be cognizant of what those similar units in their market look like. But yeah, so we're finding that stuff that's distressed, dirty, you know, hoarder house, whatever, go in, get it cleaned out, get everything renovated, get new tenants placed on the back end. We are refinancing out, and then reusing the money and repeating the process.
Yeah. And can you explain that for people that maybe don't understand, you know, Burr method or, you know, something similar to that, but kind of talk through like, why is that so beneficial versus just buying like great properties and holding them without adding that value? Because from a financial standpoint, there's a lot of incentive for you to do it the way that you are doing it.
For sure. Well, and obviously like the more turnkey you buy something, the return tends to be lower usually. But now with like the stuff we buy, so I'll use kind of a case study of one we did recently to kind of explain these numbers in this process. So we had a property bought for $100,000. It was vacant. It had been being rented for like $800 or $900 before we had taken it over. We were able to go in there, renovate the entire thing for, I think it was $12,000 or $13,000. It appraised for $200,000. We placed tenants in there for $2,200. And because that appraised for $2,000 and we had bought it for $100 and we had like $12,000 into it, you know, we were able to do an 80-20 refinance on it. So they gave us a note for $160 on the property. So that $160 paid off our initial debt and then obviously our renovation costs. And then, you know, we were able to walk away with an additional $47,000 or $48,000 in cash, basically. And A, that's not income because it's loan proceeds. And B, we always make sure when we refinance that we don't take out so much that the property still doesn't cash flow, so that the asset still is throwing off cash every single month. And then obviously, you know, we built our net worth up a little bit and we have an asset that's going to get paid down every year. And being able to recycle not only our original down payment money, but be able to pull that additional money out and have it be tax-free is just an amazing process.
And yeah, for people listening, like this is the key in the numbers, right? And kind of going back to the flipping stage, right? You know, you flip, you sell, now you're paying capital gains taxes. Here, you'll be able to get money back tax-free and to be able to pour that into something else or, you know, marketing budget or whatever that might look like to find future deals.
And that's where I think with this as well, like the education piece of this really is big in terms of understanding your local market with like hyper specificity, I think is really important just in terms of like different layouts, different size rooms, like what kind of amenities are really important in your market. Like there's all these small intricacies. And the more you're honed in on those things, the better you're going to be able to take advantage of these potential deals. Just because we see it all the time where people don't underwrite thoroughly and then they can't get the rent rates they want. Obviously, they can't get the appraisals they want. So making sure you do your due diligence, like go on Zillow, look at sold history, look at what people are renting units for, and like really dialing in your market that you're operating in and understanding those factors is probably the most important part of like that process.
So looking today, you know, you'd mentioned kind of 50 units-ish. What does that look like in terms of your business, your time, kind of the locations, that sort of thing?
Yeah, so we're operating in 4 different cities right now. And then we just brought some people in house in this last year as well. So, we have, you know, the management and, the maintenance and then the construction stuff coming on in house. And then, you know, kind of my role, really, we're looking to transition, kind of purely like facilitate deal finding, underwriting, stepping in when there's like really hard things that we have to deal with, whether it's like a really specific management question or like teaching the guys the construction stuff on you know, like the actual like job site. But kind of the goal is to keep reducing like the time input necessary for this. And actually, funny enough, you'd think bringing on employees, it would be a time decrease, but initially it actually is a time increase. It is a time increase. But you know, kind of now that we're getting all that implemented and it kind of on the runway, the goal is to kind of just keep reducing time and then keep expanding with these processes.
Yeah, it's great because I mean, I think as an outside person to have the experience that you have at the beginning, being able to fix up, like that's really tough. And to have good, trustworthy people that you know well, and obviously you did it a lot yourself at the beginning, yeah. But now you've built great relationships. Like that's a very important piece in terms of, you know, budget control and, you know, finding good, reliable workers is a challenge. And so you're as close to the source there yourself. And so that's awesome. And then to be able to handle the management piece and now it's really just finding more and better deals as you continue to scale.
Yeah. And I like to tell people too, like as far as a strategy for finding these key people that you're going to work with in these processes, I just call it aggressive networking. I really do think like connecting with as many investors as possible in your market and figuring out who they're using for these things is going to be your best option. Just because if an investor keeps using the same people, obviously, you know, that person understands how the processes work. They understand like the pricing sensitivity and the time sensitivity of investing. And the same thing goes for whether it's an agent, a lender, a home inspector, whatever. Instead of trying to reinvent the wheel, networking with people that are already utilizing those roles in their businesses and trying to work with those same people, I think is the best way to approach it.
Absolutely. The other question I had then too was in terms of finding deals, how did that work for you? Obviously you mentioned, you know, kind of MLS or, you know, right out of the gate, but as you continue to find deals and kind of add different cities, how are you able to find those or kind of who were you networking with to be able to find those good deals?
So in terms of processes to kind of have an inflow of deals, first, connecting with as many agents as possible. So we have like a primary agent that we do work with. But I mean, even to this day, I will go on Google every couple months. I will look at all the new agents in the area and I will call them and introduce myself, tell them what my buy box is and make sure they know, hey, I'm someone that will execute. I'm great to work with. And if you bring me a deal, I will work with you. And I think that goes really underutilized for a lot of investors, where they don't realize that if you just connect with enough agents and people know that you're an operator that's going to execute and you're good to work with, like they're going to bring you pocket listings. They're going to bring you good deals. And then we've got wholesalers that we work with as well. And kind of a similar thing where once you establish yourself as somebody that like, hey, we'll go look at the place. And if it makes sense, like we'll sign the paperwork today and like the process and move forward. So making sure you stick to what you say you'll do and being able to execute, like I said, really strong. And then we do a lot of like driving for dollars, people that do like for rent bandit signs, we call on that. You know, we look at tax lien stuff, eviction information. We kind of pursue all these things that look like the property is like distressed or in a difficult position just because that is our buy box. So we really do try to like target that type of stuff. And I mean, it sounds so silly because if you'd have told me 10 years ago that, oh, if you just call for rent signs, like eventually you're going to find a landlord that's like, yeah, I'm over this. Like, sure, I'll sell it, whatever. I one of the best deals I ever bought, I was driving down the street and I was driving past a fourplex and I saw this older guy literally like throwing garbage in a dumpster out of a unit. And I stopped and I went to talk to him. Turns out he's the owner. You know, he's later in his investing career. He's already, you know, kind of toying with the idea of like liquidating some of his stuff. And he's just upset because this unit got abandoned. It was full of garbage. And we started talking. And right then and there, because I mean, this is one of the cities I operated in, I threw him an offer that was about 50 grand below what the market rate should have been. And I was like, hey, you can wash your hands of it. I was like, you don't have to haul any more garbage out. I was like, I will take care of everything. And like, we shook hands and we ended up signing the paperwork. And it was just crazy because like we bought this deal. I immediately had almost 50K in equity. And then, you know, we're able to turn the tenants, do some renovations, whatever, and you come out the backside of it great as well. But just the process of stopping and talking to a guy that's throwing garbage away led to one of the best deals I've ever bought. So there's so many, I guess, options for like finding these deals where you don't necessarily have to spend a ton of money on, you know, like mailer campaigns and things like that if you are kind of, I guess, aggressive in your networking and reaching out to people.
I've heard a lot of cool stories like that where it's like, yeah, when you talk about a good deal, it's usually somebody like that. And now you mentioned, you know, tired landlords. I think for people to understand, people who have owned real estate for a while, they don't necessarily have to maximize rents, right? What are they looking for? They're looking for easy, right? Mm-hmm. And so if I can keep rents the same as what they were, my tenant's not going to leave. And since they're not going to leave, like I don't have to go in and repaint, redo the flooring. Like, hey, the cabinets are getting a little worn, but as long as they're there, that's fine. And they probably, you know, got a mortgage a while ago. It's paid down. It's paid off. So they're just looking at what's easy. And so you being able to come in, you know, I think sometimes people have this thought of like, well, you're taking advantage of people. You're not. You're finding common ground and you can add value and take it to the next level, but they're probably okay with what it was. Mm-hmm. And then when you do have to start to do some work on the property or, you know, fill up some dumpsters, they just see that as a hassle. And so they do want to walk away. And so it is kind 100%. Of, it really is that win-win scenario where they get rid of the hassle and you get the opportunity to take that property to the next level.
100%. And I think, you know, people need to be cognizant of being willing to try to solve these problems and make sure people are aware of that is a great resource. I mean, another example, we actually had a guy we bought a dozen units from at one time where his properties were kind of distressed. It was really under rented and he knew he was going to have a hard time selling them. And we actually signed a PA with him where he got an 8-month window to be able to close because he was looking to 1031 it. And instead of him trying to sell these piecemeal, identify properties, 1031 it, if somebody comes in, beats him up on inspection contingencies, whatever, we were able to say, hey, we'll give you this long horizon for you to identify a property. You let us know, we can execute within 30 days. And we're able to buy these 12 units at a severe discount, but he saved a ton of money in capital gains. And it really was like a win-win for both of us. And like you said, solving those problems and finding the scenarios where everybody wins, it's just amazing and it creates a ton of opportunity.
Absolutely. So thinking about the future, I know you kind of touched on this a little bit, but yeah, where do you want to continue to grow or kind of what are you looking to do?
Yeah. So next goal is we want the portfolio to hit about 10 million and then keep bringing more people in-house and kind of expanding our infrastructure, just kind of making it so the time constraint continues to be less and less. We can still, be a part of that process just because it is so much fun. And I really do enjoy it a ton. I've actually been doing a little bit of a real estate coaching on the side. I was doing it local. And then I've been kind of reaching out a little bit more where I've been taking on people kind of walking through the same process. So basically grow the portfolio and then help other people do kind of the same thing.
Awesome. And for people that want to reach out and kind of, learn more about you or, take advantage of your wisdom and expertise, how can they do that?
Yeah. So Instagram is the best starting spot. I'm posting on there really actively. And then YouTube as well, where we're starting to get more videos uploaded and stuff. Historically, I haven't been a prolific poster on social media, but we've been changing that lately.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Cody, so much for coming on, sharing your story, and best of luck as you guys continue to grow in the future.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.